Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Wednesday, October 25th, 2023. It's sort of fun to watch how quickly time flies, and here we are. The fourth quarter of 2023. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in today. We really appreciate it. I've been, as you know, on hiatus for the last week. Did some traveling and, of course, the big conference at WVW-TV last weekend. And looks like we're all back saddle today and trying to move forward and continue what we do best, which is to bring you the news and financial insight with respect to many of the stories and the headlines today. I'd like to thank WVW-TV for, of course, hosting my show. Smith America Trading is a great American company based in Arizona, and they make a market in tangible precious metals, which is lots of syllables, but what that means is and actually owning them or touching them. That's where the tangible comes from. Give Swiss America a call. It's a great company, and they've been in this space for a long time. Very generous sponsor of WVW-TV, and thankful that they sponsor my program as well. You can call them at 1-800-519-6271. And if you ask them for free information, they're happy to send it out that explains all of the ins and outs of buying and holding precious metals. And if you are interested in going to their website, which is swissamerica.com, you can shop around and see what they have to offer. And if you use the promo code EASTMAN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, type in EASTMAN, and they will be happy to send you free information as well. And right now, they're sponsoring a very important sale. They have a sale going $0.50 standing silver $0.50 piece. And it's a great price, and it also includes shipping. So it's free shipping, and we all think about that when we buy things online. You think, oh, the shipping costs is sometimes a burden. Well, this is a great deal. If you want to and you want free shipping, this is a time to do it. Now, there's a cap of 250 coins per person, and of course the promotion ends when they run out of coins. So, you know, now, this is a great gift idea for, we're entering into the holiday gift season, and when you think about what should I get, you know, my niece or my nephew or Uncle Joe or whoever, oftentimes it's a difficult, decision to make, because you want to buy them something and give them something of value and that they're happy to receive, and it won't end up in the secondhand store or the trash. So if you're interested at all or thinking about maybe what can I do for this holiday gift giving season, give it some thought, because for $13.50, you're probably not going to break the bank. And if it's shipped to you for free, just like other things you might buy during promotion week, this is a great opportunity to buy some silver. And of course, take a look at their website and buy some gold as well if you're interested, because you certainly want to be, if you're in the market for that type of product, you want to be thinking about a vendor that you can trust and that will deliver on time and deliver the qualities. And that's Swiss America. These guys are great. They do a wonderful job. And if you're looking for someone or some place to buy silver and gold, give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. Now, I want to bridge from that to an interesting story that I saw in the news, which gives you some indication that you may not be alone when you look at buying silver coins for $13.50. The Chinese government, very, very interesting story. In the month of August, which of course was 2 months back, the Chinese sold $21.2 billion in U.S. assets. And what that means is the Chinese Treasury, just like we have Janet Yellen, they've got somebody over there that runs their treasury. And the Chinese government buys and sells global assets. We know they buy companies, you know, they buy land and mines and niobium mines in South America. But one of the things that the Chinese government does, of course, is buys financial assets. And that's a fancy term for U.S. bonds. Okay, the United States government, Janet Yellen, sells the bonds to raise the money to pay for the programs. And the buyers are Chinese. Now, let's think about how this works. Okay, we drop down to the proletariat level of America. At it inevitably. I don't know. I saw a statistic. It's like 93% of the time it's going to be made in China. Okay. So I go to my big box hardware store and I need a hammer and some pliers and some nails or whatever. And of course it's all made in China. So what do? I go to the little scanning thing when I check out and meet. In goes the. Of course, I have to pay for the merchandise. Of course, that's the way the deal works. And then I put my credit card in and they email me a receipt. And lo and behold, somewhere money is transferred to the big box. Okay. And I take the hammer and nails and I go home. The big box, of course, is buying all this stuff from China. So what do? They have agents, and of course, they place orders in China for the merchandise that they need, the inventory to stock their stores. So my money ends up going across the ocean to China. Of my big box is buying their inventory from Chinese suppliers. So now my dollar has gone from my wallet. It's not really, it's digital. It's through my bank, through the big box bank, across the ocean to the vendor, the manufacturer's bank, and now the money's sitting over in China, okay? And of course, Chinese have tax systems just like we do, and the government gets their hands on some of those dollars, and of course, what do they do with these dollars? Well, they can't just sit there. They're not paper. They're digital. They don't exist. So what they do is, of course, they go to their, Chinese stockbroker, and they buy government bonds to park those dollars as a holding place, okay? Because they want to hold assets. And of course, there's geopolitical reasons to hold other people's debt, like leverage, political leverage. But the Chinese have lots and lots and lots. There's $21.2 billion that they sold in August. I don't know exactly what the number is, but I'm sensing it's very close to $1 trillion, plus maybe $2 trillion in U.S. assets that the Chinese government holds. Okay. So the interesting thing about this story is that in August, they sold $21.2 billion in these bonds. They sold them back into the bond market, which is this gigantic global swirling pool of it's like a stock market or a commodities market. It's the debt market. They sell them in and they go to cash. And what they did is they bought gold. Okay. And this ties into this discussion with Swiss America. So the Chinese government bought $21.2 billion in gold. And of course, what the Chinese government is doing, just like the United States government has done since our inception, is they increase their stockpiles of gold. Now, if you look at the numbers, and if the numbers are to be believed, the United States is still the biggest pile of gold in the world, okay? But the Chinese are coming up a fast second, and the Russians, of course, they have their own gold. All they got to do is dig it up out of the vast amount of terra firma that they own or control. But the point is that sovereign governments are acquiring and growing gold assets. And what that tells you is, that story tells you, is that the Chinese have fled the dollar market with respect to $21.2 billion, which is probably a smidgen of their U.S. holdings. But it's an interesting point because there's only so much gold. And at the end of the day, the Chinese are selling dollars and taking the value of buying gold, and they're building their gold stockpile. Now, and that's an interesting point. So if you are, sitting at home watching this thinking, gee, should I spend $13.50 for a silver half dollar, or maybe I should buy a gold coin, you aren't alone. The Chinese government and other people around the world are buying precious metals as well. So the question for the average American investor is, what's going on? Why is that happening? What does it matter to me? Should I be thinking about that? And, that's for you to decide. You always have to make your own investment decisions. But what you're seeing is, as the U.S. dollar has been the global currency since Bretton Woods, right after the Second World War, is under tremendous stress because, as I talked about in the past, we have $33 trillion in debt at the Federal Treasury, and that number is likely to go to $35 trillion because the current year deficit is approaching $2 trillion, and that becomes an interesting problem. So the smart money, the global money, the people who think about things on a global basis are diversifying their assets so that not all of their eggs are in one basket, classic saying. And it suggests, I think from the perspective of those who think about such things, diversifying into precious metals is not a crazy idea. I mean, you know, if the Chinese government is doing it, the Russians are building their piles of gold, and of course the Germans have it, and the Americans have gold, and you know, around the world, these central governments and central banks are accumulating physical metal. What it tells you is that is a path in the event that the global currency markets come unhinged due to excessive debt. And we're seeing this with the interest rates creeping higher and higher, that in the event that something blows off, as we'll say, there's an alternative that goes back thousands of years, which is gold. And then you go back into, I think it's the second chapter of the Bible, it's in Genesis, talking about, you know, in a certain place in the Middle East where the gold is good. And the point is that gold has always been, and silver to a great extent, has been a platform upon which remonetizations happen. Now, there's a speculative component to that. You want to buy gold because you think it's going up and you make money. But the bigger reality is the preservation of your wealth level and buying power. You have to lock that in somewhere. And if you don't own a lot of property and land, real estate, either the vacant land or, you know, buildings, and maybe you don't have a Rembrandt in your collection or things like that, then the question becomes, you know, in the event of some kind of a currency meltdown, how do you preserve your wealth, your buying power? I mean, because wealth and buying power is always an accumulation of former work output, you know, unless you inherit it, and then it was somebody else's work output. But at the end of the day, when you think about it, you know, why do you go about doing that? And it's because you're really, really trying to figure out a way to preserve the asset value, your buying power value. And one way to do that, of course, is to invest in tangibles. Now, and that's different than speculating. You buy a gold coin, oh, it's going to go up, I'll make some money. That's gambling, that's speculating. And you know, and there are people who do that because, you know, markets go up and down, and you can speculate on orange juice futures, you can speculate on pork bellies, you can speculate on gold. It does, you know, if you're a gambler, you can speculate. But from the perspective of how do you preserve your wealth beyond your home, then you have to think about methods of doing that. And of course, the stock market is one way and the bond market, but it's a complex world. And that's why, you know, if you want to give Swiss America a call and get some of that free information, 1-800-519-6271, if you call them and they'll send you an explanation about how this stuff works. And there's always risk. The idea, you know, you buy something for, let's say, $13.50 and the market goes to $8, well, you lost. But the bigger picture is, why do you do that at all? And I think that's really important. So anyway, I'm watching the Chinese. I know they're, you know, and Eastern cultures are very big traditionally in gold. East India, of course, is probably on the cutting edge of every last citizen having gold, and they tend to wear this jewelry, and it's part of their culture. And of course, there's a display of wealth component and things like that. But at the end of the day, the idea is to take your physical labor and convert it into something that stores the value of that hour of your time in labor. It's captured, it encapsulates it. And then the idea is if the money gets kind of weird, and it's kind of weird now when you're looking at inflation, that will give you some chance to preserve that hour's worth of labor. Now I'm getting into some basic economic theory here. So anyway, it was an interesting story. It's also, you know, it's not unusual because if you think back, you know, the U.S. dollar, we spend it in the big box, they buy stuff from China, China gets the dollar, they turn it into gold. This same phenomenon happened a while back and still happens today where, you know, I pull into my gas station and I fill up my tank. The money goes into the gas station, which goes to the oil company, which goes to Saudi Arabia, which sells that and buys gold. Okay, so it's turning my through a number of steps, and then the question is, why are the people who are the countries who have that economic clout, why are they converting to gold rather than just holding dollars and they do both? But that's the pattern that you want to be thinking about when you see a story like that. Okay, I want to move on. One of the things we're watching is this higher interest rates. There's two stories today that are important. Number one, the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee is destined to meet in November, and of course, what they will do is they will take a look at the 12 regions of the United States. Each Federal Reserve Bank has a region, and what they'll do is they'll look at where is the economy headed. Is it going up? Are we looking at a recession? Is it booming? And they're going to have to make a decision on interest rates. And keep in mind, they've been raising the interest rates very aggressively since last year. About a year and a half ago, we were looking at 9% inflation, which is crazy high. It's very high, and the Fed immediately leaped into action and used its tool, its monetary policy tool, and by tweaking the interest rates higher, they're pulling the punch bowl back just as the party is apparently going along just fine. And the idea is to slow things down, slow the economy down, cool the inflation, and then achieve their goal under their dual mandate of full employment and low inflation. And their benchmark is 2%. Well, we know the story. They've been raising the rates and raising the rates. And last week, I was mentioning, perhaps the week before, that at some point there's a disconnect or a detethering, an untethering of the Fed's monetary policy. And with respect to, there's two policies going on. You know, remember my big ball of the economy is the private sector, the businesses, and the individuals. Everybody's got a job or a farm or a business, you know, and this is the economy. And then the government steps in. And it just two things. Basically, it sort of regulates that economy because the thinking is if the economy was just a big ball of laissez-faire, free market economics, that market becomes ruthless and there are many losers and many winners, but it's a ruthless place. People can get really hurt. So the government steps in as sort of the police and they'll say, okay, we can have this big ball of economy. It's a free market economy, but you got to, you know, some regulation here. You can't make widgets and dump your waste, your industrial waste in the middle of Main Street, or you can't pollute the water. You can't pollute the air. You can't run a factory where people's arms are getting chopped off. I mean, there's all these regulations that try to make the big ball of the free market economy a safer place. And that's the first step that the government does. And of course, the second step is there's this idea of the public good. We will go into this big laissez-faire ball and we will tax and then we will spend it on public goods. And sometimes that's good. We, you know, instead of dirt paths, we'll have interstate highways so the trucks and commerce can move faster, or railroads or airports or bridges over rivers. And we make life better, not only for the citizens, but also better for commerce, so that commerce is more efficient and grows and it's bigger and our ball gets bigger and bigger. And that's the taxing component. So we have a regulatory component to keep people basically killing each other. And then we've got this taxing component, but we take some of that out of the big ball and we make it a nicer place to live. Okay. And that's effectively where the government's going. And of course, the fiscal component to that in a pure world, an Adam Smithian kind of world, is they would take some money out of the big ball and spend it, and it would be nice. And they'd take a little more the next year and spend it, it'd be nice. Well, what's happened with the Keynesian version of this is, of course, there's not only tax and spend, there's borrow and spend. It's this Keynesian leveraging idea, or the Keynesian multiplier, if you want to get technical in economics speak, that has multiplied us to a $33 trillion deficit, soon to be $35 trillion, and it's multiplied us into bankruptcy. So at the end of the day, when the fiscal policy, which is supposed to be tax, suspend, and build a bridge, is now tax, suspend, and borrow and invade half the world and basically bankrupt the country, this fiscal policy component has outstripped the monetary policy component of the Federal Reserve, which you have to remember, the Federal Reserve is still a private entity. There's government appointees in the Board of Governors. They're appointed by the president for 15-year terms and confirmed by the Senate. But the banking system is part of the big ball. Okay, it's the private sector. It's in the big ball. The government is outside of the big ball, but the Federal Reserve is within the big ball. So what they're trying to do within the big ball is fiddle around with the interest rates to try and, you know, like an accordion, you know, speed things up, slow things down. If it's the metaphor of the party, more punch, less punch in the bowl. that's what's going on. And when the ball can't regulate itself with monetary policy, because the fiscal policy of the tax and spend, borrow and spend, is pushing the market for these debt instruments to the point where interest rates have taken off. They're no longer linked to the monetary policy of the Fed. And of course, the Fed knows this. And now we're hearing these news stories saying, well, you know, maybe we're not going to do anything in November because rates are a lot higher than we wish they were right now. And all we're going to do is add fuel to the fire. The point is, the federal government is basically—it's not a benefit of the big ball of the economy. It is now a thing, and that really drifts off toward the Marxist idea that nothing should happen without control of the government. The whole world should be controlled by the government. The whole big ball should be controlled by the government. And that's what the Soviet Union tried to do for 70 years until it finally collapsed. And that's what Mao Zedong's China tried to do until they saw that the big ball of the economy needs its own oxygen. It needs to function. So at the end of the day, we're seeing a real question as to whether the Federal Reserve will do anything with respect to interest rates or whether it even matters. Because if the rates are higher than the Fed wants, by the Fed cutting rates, they can send a message to the big ball. But at the end of the day, if the federal government is pushing their fiscal policy to the point of effectively bankrupting the money system, that becomes a real problem. Now, keep in mind, the big ball is not only in the United States, but it's a global big ball. And free markets are human nature. I mean, you think about, mankind is a creation, and it's sinful human nature, and this the way we interact with each other will happen notwithstanding any type of government structure at all, from the Greek city states through the Roman Empire to the feudalist times of 1200 to the Soviet times to the absolute capitalist times. The markets tend to exist. So at some point, when the federal government has tax and spend, which is interesting because they're not taxing anywhere near enough, and I've got a story about that, there's a decoupling. First, we've decoupled from the Federal Reserve, which is within the ball trying to control. At some point, it decouples. And, governments come and governments go. Historically, it's been the case. There's nothing new under the sun. But what is certain is that the larger the everybody's trading. You're going to buy and you're going to sell. You're going to eat. You're going to be part of an economy. And what a government does to itself, ultimately, it is swept away. And then something else comes. You know, exist without a government. You got to have some kind of a structure in society to keep the rules. But at the end of the day, this becomes a real question. So as these types do. And if you look at Venezuela today, and you look at Zimbabwe, and you look at Argentina, 133% inflation, what do people do to protect themselves? And that's why you have to be thinking about getting out of an inflation. Reading an article where when you get paid in pesos, the first thing you do is figure out how to convert it to U.S. dollars. Because believe it or not, the U.S. dollar is a rock of Gibraltar compared to the Argentinian peso. So you want to get yourself out of the inflating currency and into a safer currency to hold the value. The same thing in Zimbabwe. I had the blessing of having a student from Zimbabwe in one of my economics classes, and she was able to lecture us. I gave her the podium, and boy, I'll tell you, that was a day that I learned something as a professor from a student when she was explaining how her family in Zimbabwe with the crazy, they're printing $28 zillion notes, and you need millions of. But she said the first thing you do whenever you got paid is you either went to the South African Rand, or you would get into U.S. dollars, or you'd get into grain, or you'd get into anything that you could invest in or purchase shoes, basically, even if they were two different size shoes, you got out of the currency and into something else to preserve value. And their families learned very quickly how to maneuver within that system. So what it tells you is, notwithstanding what the government's doing to its own economy, people are smart, and they're going to take care of their own interests, and that's why it's kind of an interesting thing. You want to be paying attention to how do I hedge my bet? You know, should I buy a fancy painting for the wall, or should I buy some silver coins, you know, whatever, so that you can preserve your buying power, which is important. So it's another interesting phenomenon. And I think that the effect on the stock market, you know, when you're seeing higher interest rates on CDs and bonds, people think, well, if I can get 5.5% on a 1-year CD at the bank, you know, basically relax, or should I keep gambling away in the stock market? That has a softening effect on the demand for stocks and bonds when people can find, you know, a secure lockdown. The question is, at 5.5%, I saw a CD for 11, it was 13 months at 5.5%. What's inflation going to be? Right now it's cruising along at 3.5 to 4.1, depending if it's overall or core. So maybe you're a percent ahead next year, and that has an effect on the market. So if you're thinking about just putting all your money in the stock market, there are counterbalances as a result of these higher interest rates that people have to think about. And I also noticed that new home sales number surged. It's always surge. You know, nothing ever just kind of creeps up. It's always a surge, it collapsed. Well, what I did a little digging into that, and of course, new home sales are up because builders are subsidizing the interest rate. The existing home market is virtually dead in many places. Nobody's selling a house unless they have to. So if you're a home builder and you provide a mortgage interest subsidy, so instead of 8%, you can sell it to a buyer and they're only paying 5%. That's a great deal. You're getting a 5% mortgage on a brand new house. Who wouldn't take that deal? But what is happening is that the builder's gross margins, their operating margins are being, well, maybe not operating margins, but their gross margins are being compressed because that cost to subsidize the interest rate on that mortgage is a building expense. So what they're trying to do is keep revenues going because they've got, you know, payroll and they've got, infrastructure. So what they're doing is taking part of their profits and buying down the rate of these mortgages. So from a buyer's perspective, that's great. You're getting a deal in an 8% market. You're buying a 5% mortgage home. And of course, the builder is doing the subsidy. There's no free lunch. I mean, the mortgage rate's 8%. Somebody's going to pay that 8%. So it's 5% from the buyer and the other 3% from the builder. And it keeps the builder's lights on, so be it. But it's not good for the builder, but it may be necessary for the builder. So that's another indication. I also wanted to talk about one more story I saw. And it goes back to what I was saying about this fiscal policy. As we know, as Americans, we have an obligation to pay our income taxes. I mean, that's just part of the cost of living in the United States. We're citizens of this republic, and you know there's a cost. And there's no free lunch, you know. So you have to pay your taxes. And if you go back to Scripture, of course, even Jesus tells you, you know, render under Caesar that which is Caesar, and that's the point. You have to pay your taxes. And, you know, sometimes people don't pay their taxes, or they come up with some very clever ways of pretending that they don't have to, or concocting some argument that something's deductible when it's not. Now, trust me, the Internal Revenue Service has been around a very long time, and they have seen it all. There is nothing new under the sun. So if you think you've come up with some clever way to deduct your pet goldfish, they've seen it, and it won't work. And, of course, we know that the Internal Revenue Service has ramped up its enforcement because obviously you're running a $2 trillion deficit. They got to squeeze every last nickel out of the taxpayers that they're due. And of course, there's a great learned hand opinion for the U.S. Supreme Court. You have every American has an obligation to pay every last penny of income taxes owed, and then not one penny more. Okay, so the idea is you have to, you know, honestly fill out your tax form and just pay them the money, and that's the cost of living here, okay? Well, some people get creative, and they try to be clever, and of course, you can't win, okay? You should just pay your taxes and be thankful you live in a nice place. But the story here is that the IRS collected, this is from January through, I guess, October, this is year-to-date, The IRS collected $160 million in taxes from people who thought they were being clever and didn't fully report their income, or they used exemptions or deductions that they're not entitled to, or they sort of stretched the limit of what a business expense is. And at the end of the day, that was only 2 days worth of spending at the in the Ukraine war. So what it tells you is that we got a bit of a mess. I'll talk more about that tomorrow. Thanks so much for tuning in. Have a great afternoon, and take care. Bye.